Good evening, everyone. I'm Rochelle Rice, and welcome to our teleconference this evening. Our guest speaker is Carol Ward, and Carol is a licensed psychotherapist, nationally recognized speaker, and communication consultant. The purpose of her work is to show people how to link their hearts and their heads when making decisions. Carol is the author of Find Your Inner Voice, Using Instinct and Intuition Through the Body, Mind Connection, and her new book, Worried Sick. Carol, thrilled to have you join us this evening, especially congratulations on your new book, Worried Sick. Are you there, Carol?
Thank you. Yeah, I am. Thanks great. So much. It's always great to be on the call with you.
Terrific. Listen, I thought it was so fascinating. You talk about there are two types of worry. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, this is really interesting because I want people to understand that the purpose of my book was not to make worry the enemy, that we're always going to have worry in our life. And in fact, I view worry as part of the body's natural awareness that something is wrong or out of sync. You know, we worry for a reason. We worry about, did we sign that paper? We worry if we forgot something. And it's just our bodies and minds ability to say we need to pay a little more attention. So that's a normal type of worry. And all I was trying to do when I started out with this book is to help people understand that, but also not to let worry dominate their lives. That's the important thing. The person who is overly worried is not living their life to the fullest. So I decided to differentiate between two types of worry. One is chronic worry, and chronic worry is when, from the moment you wake up to the moment you go to bed, you are looking at life like, what's wrong with this picture, or the worst case scenario. It's hard to relax. It's hard to believe that things could get better. It's hard to believe that things can turn around. There's just this constant feeling that you have to be on guard and paying attention to what may go wrong. So that's chronic worry. And the root of chronic worry is usually coming out of earlier trauma. You know, Rochelle, it's not something that people want to do. It's not something that they wake up going, gee, I can't wait to worry today. But it's an automatic way of thinking. It's this automatic way of thinking, again, it's a defense mechanism that's come out of either the trauma from early childhood or a series of traumas throughout life. So it's just this way that people have developed to protect themselves. It's outdated, but it's a way.
And, Carol, the situational worry that you talk about?
Situational worry is the things that we're all encountering every day. Situational worry is the economy. Situational worry is your own health or a friend getting sick or not enough money coming in or having to move or getting caught off guard or surprised by a situation. Situational worry are things that we're going to deal with our whole life. And the really important difference is situational worry or circumstantial worry is something that once you are presented with the facts, either by a good friend or simply read about them, usually your mindset can shift. You know, someone could say to you, you know, let's look at that situation a different way, or it's not so bad, or here are the real reasons why that situation is happening. And you go, oh, okay, and you can take in support and you can shift. Chronic worry doesn't respond very well to logic. And that's why it can be frustrating for both people, for both the chronic worrier and the person that's trying to help. It doesn't respond to logic because it's based in trauma. And one of the ways to shift chronic worries is going to be something that we talk about tonight.
Okay, terrific. When we talk about how can we tell if we are overly worried, meaning what's out of balance, and in particular some of the things we were talking about, you and I were the, you know, we were talking about the metabolism, some of the physical signs, but the psychological ones as well. What can we tell what's out of balance?
Right. So I broke it into that you can start to check off when things are out of balance on a physical level by noticing physical signs of distress. You know, gastrointestinal distress, headaches, skin problems, you could be experiencing shortness of breath, hair loss, grinding your teeth at night, you could be biting your nails, jaw tension, nervous eating, loss of appetite, and increased heart rate, or just muscle tension. And as long as these symptoms are not based in, you know, a medical root, mm-hmm. they usually have an emotional or stress-related base. So you can start to, you know, say, gee, if I'm healthy.
Yeah.
Yes, hi, this is Rochelle. If you would like, could you hit star 6? And we'll mute you so you can continue with the call. Is that okay? Thank you.
What did you want
to talk about?
Carol? Yes.
We'll continue on tonight.
Sure. So you can gauge, as long as you've had a good checkup, that as long as, you know, that is all well and good, if you're starting to exhibit some of these other symptoms, now you're going to start to look for the stress level in your life and the worry level in your life and start to correlate, when did these symptoms start? Try to track that. When did they start? When did I first start noticing them? Because when we're feeling overwhelmed physically, when we're not feeling great, when worry and stress has affected our bodies, we can feel in a state of fear and panic. And a way to ease that is to start doing a little detective work. So it's not like, oh, my gosh, this is going on and it'll never end. To start asking a series of questions, again, how long have I been feeling this way? Can I track back when it started? And what was going on during that time?
Uh-huh.
Who was I dealing with, or what kind of situation was I dealing with? And allowing that to give you the clues to addressing what's the root of your worry.
Great. Carol, excuse me for just one moment. If you're on the call, could you please hit star 6 to mute the line, and this way we'll be able to hear Carol nice and clear. Thank you. Carol, so a number of the women, one of the things that I find a lot is our worry and fear and concern and chronic worry about weight management. Could you address that a little bit in terms of, you know, what's happening with the body? How can we, let's start with what's happening with the body, what's that chronic worrying?
So when the body start, when you start to feel, you know, worried or stressed, the body's fight or flight mechanism kicks in. And the first one is the sympathetic nervous system. And you can tell that it's the body's response to what's going on because it includes the word sympathy. The body's having a sympathetic response to circumstances in your life, or physical, personal, professional. So adrenaline kicks in, this fight or flight response starts to happen, your heart rate picks up, your body literally goes into high alert. And then if the body doesn't have a chance to relax, you find yourself in this chronic state of over-worry. And if you're over-worrying all the time, eventually other systems in your body start to get affected. Your nervous system, your digestive systems, certain organs like and glands like the adrenal glands, or your heart, or even your mind start to get affected by this over-stimulus. And go ahead, Rochelle.
No, I was going to say, so we've got this chronic stress going on inside the body, which I think sometimes can be confused as people getting excited or pumped up on the adrenaline. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, many people have heard that phrase, adrenaline junkie. It's just kind of like, what can I do next? How many calls can I answer? Well, let me multitask. If I'm at the computer, maybe at the same time I can read a magazine. Maybe there's rice boiling on the stove, and there's this constant stimulus. And the body is responding, responding, responding. It's almost like, you know, when you're watching television and breaking news comes on, or the scroll is going across the bottom of the screen, breaking news, breaking news. Well, your whole system is being stimulated. And so, again, you need to calm down.
Carol, forgive me one more
yes.
moment. I apologize. There's someone, excuse me, I'm sorry, with the television. Could you please just star 6 to mute your line so we can get a clear message from Carol. Thank you very much. Thank you. Okay, Carol, so I'd like to get back into that with that chronic worrying again about weight management. So could you just talk a little bit again about being the junkie, about being the adrenaline junkie?
Well, adrenaline junkie. It's this constant either responding to other people's needs, you know, and not taking care of your own, or being overstimulated and overscheduled in your own life. So your body is constantly revved up. And then in order to keep that revved up feeling going, you can then fuel your body with foods or drinks that kind of keep that level at a very high level. So you are feeding the feeling of being overstimulated, and this vicious cycle goes round and round and round.
And so even that can come, I mean, this can create a lot of stress on the person's not only the physical self, but the emotional self and the energetic self. There's so much going on.
Yeah, and it's hard then to even decide how to slow down. Everything becomes overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people are like, I know I need to work less. I know I need to perhaps make better food choices. I know I need to exercise more. But when there's so much stimulation going on, it can be overwhelming. There's, you know, the exercise you do at the beginning of these calls where you're simply allowing people to calm down and connect to their bodies is a great way to start seeing your way through worry and stress in life. And I don't know if your callers realize that, you know, you contributed a whole chapter on movement to my book, and you really talked about, which I heartily agree with, using different types of movement to match your mood,
right,
which then again can help calm you down, even if you are walking fiercely or doing soothing yoga or swimming or Nia or dancing, anything that brings you pleasure. But choosing the movement that matches your move helps you connect to your body, helps calm you down so that you can start addressing some of the areas of overwhelm in your life.
Terrific. Well, Carol, in the book you do some great strategies and techniques on how people can begin to start to manage their worry. Could you take us through some of those?
Sure. I actually break it into the three C's, which is, one is calmness. That's the first one, getting into a place of calmness. My favorite one, which I know you agree with, is movement, doing some kind of movement in order to calm the body down. Because we respond either mentally or physically to worry. If we respond mentally, if we're thinking about something and we're upset and we're worried, it affects our body. Or if we're having a physical response to stress, like, you know, when you gasp or are feeling very anxious internally and your stomach is churning, it starts to affect how you think. So everything is connected. So getting into a place of calmness, either through breathing the way that you recommended at the beginning of this call, or some kind of movement helps. And again, I want to loop this back. If you are a chronic worrier, meaning logic does not really help you get out of a state of worry, you just don't believe it, you don't believe the person talking to you, you don't believe what you're reading or seeing, you just can't shift your mindset, then doing some kind of movement, either walking from one room to the other, turning on music, playing a computer game, walking out the door, whatever it is the best way for a chronic worry to get out of their head. You need to almost fake your way out of that state of mind, even if you don't believe it's going to work. And I share this example in the book. You know, my mother has been very ill, and I've been a primary caretaker of her, which is one of the reasons this book came about. And I would have to give myself a break. I just had to. But as I was walking out the door to get into the car to drive to the local gym, the whole time I was thinking, oh, this isn't going to work. But as I literally got distance from where my mother was living on the road to the gym, I started to feel my mental state change. And then actually doing some kind of physical exercise once I got there. Or sometimes I just lay in the sauna. That helped me as well. So getting into a place of calmness. The other one is clarity. That's the second C. How do you get to clarity? And again, using calmness as a way in. But I ask people to do things such as addressing their worry by remembering how they've approached situations in the past and how they got through those situations. So simply saying, doing a remember game, gee, when I was worried about my health 5 years ago, how did I get through that? What were the strategies I used then? Did I lean on people? Did I find the best practitioners? Did I read about it? Did I connect to a community such as the one you have on the phone right now? Did I connect to an online community? What worked for me back then? Or, Rochelle, you can simply ask yourself, you know, what type of person am I? How do I receive support in order to find clarity? Do I like to do things on my own? Do I like to do things with a group? Am I a morning person? Do I do my best thinking at night? And to really define for yourself how you can get into a state of mental clarity. Because if you're not a morning person and you force yourself to get up to try to do problem solving first thing in the morning, it's not going to work.
Right.
But if you're a night person, you can then allow yourself that time in the evening.
Wonderful. So the three C's, the calmness, the clarity, and the community.
Final is community, which is that you tap into a community and get support, either online, in person, through books, through mentors, through coaches, through therapists, whomever. And you find a community of people that can support you and offer you support when you need it.
Terrific. Carol, talk a little bit about a plan, how someone can put a plan into action about this.
Sure. When you're feeling overwhelmed with worry, or even not, I just think it's important to try one thing. I'm really a big believer in the one thing at a time philosophy. So let's say that you want to implement or try out a new movement plan. One thing, you're going to, you know, choose a piece of music as a step toward that. Or let's say you want to try a different healthy eating plan, but it just feels overwhelming to take it all on at once. Well, just carve out one aspect of what you want to start trying. Maybe you just want to add the water bit in, drinking more water, and just try that for a week. Or maybe you want to add an apple, literally an apple a day.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a big fan of one thing, one at a time, because worry affects a lot of areas. It affects sleep, it affects nutrition, it affects mood, it affects emotions. So you want to not try to take on everything at once, because it won't work. You'll be extra worried that you're not even doing that right. So I'm a big fan of just taking one piece of one area and starting that way and putting it into practice, whether you turn off the TV so you're not watching breaking news first thing in the morning and you give yourself some quiet time, whether, again, you choose a class that you want to go to once, whether you add in a certain food or eliminate one, but you really do one simple thing in order to plan a path to be worry less.
Mm. Carol, you talk a bit about learning to ask for help and to really speak up. And I know speaking up is a challenge for women. Well, I'll put that to myself at times. But for women in general, it seems a challenge to sometimes speak up and either, A, ask for what you need or say no to something that's not working. Could you address that a little bit for us with regards to worry?
No is such a hard thing. I always say that, worry creates obligation breeds worry, and worry creates obligation. Meaning if you can't say no and you fill up your schedule with a lot of activities because you can't say no, you're going to start to worry. And the more you worry, the more you're not going to be able to say no for additional things that come into your life. So the first thing I have people do since I'm a body-mind person is that whenever you're asked to do something, you have to say, let me check my schedule. Let me get back to you, whether it's via email or on the phone. You're allowed to say that to another person.
Mm-hmm.
And then sit with it. Literally picture yourself doing that activity. Try it on your body. Or how are you going to feel adding those hours into your schedule? How are you going to feel taking on that project? If you feel weighted down, it's a no. If you feel excited and energized, that's a good sign that it's a yes. And a great thing then too, since it's hard to say no, if you do have to say no, is to use the phrase, that doesn't work for me right now. Mm. And to be honest, you know, it's hard for me to say this, but that doesn't work for me right now. And people might say, oh, but you're so good at it. You're such a good organizer. You're so wonderful doing X, Y, and Z. I really appreciate you saying that, but it doesn't work for me right now.
Right. Yeah. Easier said than done, I'm sure, at times.
Totally. It takes practice.
Yeah. Carol, you know, all of this about the worry and all, I still keep coming back to, you know, I talk a lot about the cycle, when people get into a cycle and it's they haven't moved their body and they start to worry about their weight and then they eat more and then they don't move and it goes into this vicious cycle. What about that person who shuts down completely and can't move because of the worry surrounding weight?
Again, we go back to challenging those beliefs by really, first of all, being compassionate, but also challenging. So first the compassion piece, like, okay, I've developed a way of coping. You know, you developed the best way you could. You really did. You developed the best way you could. You had to shut down because feelings were overwhelming or pain was overwhelming, or you just had to find a way through a difficult situation in childhood or in life right now. That's a given. Compassion is the first. And then to start saying, okay, how, you know, is that way of working in the world, you know, helping me out right now? Usually the answer is no. How do I take one step? And that goes back to just choosing one thing, whether it's attending one of your classes and saying, I'm going to try that yoga class or that dance class, just one time.
Right.
I don't have to ever go back. You always want to give the option. Don't have to ever go back. And then fake it forward. Fake your way out the door. Fake your way into taking that action. I don't believe adding more water is going to work, but I'm going to try it. Don't believe it, but I'm going to try it. Or I don't believe cutting down on my schedule is going to make me feel better, but I'll try it. Kicking and screaming all the way, maybe, but I'm going to try it. Fake it forward.
I love that, fake it forward.
Yes.
Wonderful. Listen, Carol, in our last few minutes here, you talk, you and I agree on this completely, about making room for downtime or activities that actually nourish you, that may help you move away from the worry. Could you speak about that a little bit?
Well, since I'm a big fan of napping every chance I can get, I am, you know, all for the old kindergarten lie down. That's my one form of taking a break. It's, you know, whether it's I just stare at the ceiling or curl up on the couch. I really ask people to ask themselves, what does downtime mean to them? I mean, for some people, it's getting in the tub. For some people, it's watching a reality show. For some people, it's a computer. For some people, it's a book. But it is so key because it literally slows those systems within your body down.
Right.
Meaning
right.
The nervous system, the adrenals, the heart rate. You are simply taking a break. And you don't have to explain it to anyone what your downtime thing. You know, it's not about sitting in a meditative pose all the time. Sometimes, you know, for me, sometimes playing spider solitaire feels great.
Right.
It helps me unwind. So you get to choose it, but try to carve it in, again, one time a week to start, then twice, then three, just once. Take that one time step.
Yes, it's interesting because I refer to it, you and I have talked about this, as nourishing oneself, but I think what's often overlooked is all the underlying physical symptoms that are taken care of as well just by taking the time for this.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Carol, I'm going to invite our callers to come back onto the line if they would like to hit *7. That will unmute your line, and we'll be happy to open it up to Q&A, and we'll do a raffle of Carol's book. So *7 will bring you back on the call. If you'd like to ask a question to Carol, you just, if you wouldn't mind, just say your name and where you're calling from and ask your question. Would anyone like to ask a question?
I wouldn't. This is Elaine. I wouldn't like to ask a question. I think it was well outlined.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear it, Elaine. Elaine is in Amherst, Massachusetts, so it's great to have you on the call.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Michelle,
anyone else?
You know, I want to offer one tip for if an office tip for or a home office tip, you know, that if people can't move, like you can't get out and exercise or do something and your mind is spinning,
right.
A great thing to do is, you know, to borrow your terminology, feet on the floor, hands on your lap, but with your palms turned downward on your knees.
Yes.
You can do it with your eyes closed or open. And for about 30 seconds to a minute, just alternate tapping left knee, right knee, or right knee, left knee, just back and forth and back and forth and back and forth to your tension on your hands, and it lowers anxiety.
Nice. That's the tapping. So your hands are tapping the knees, right, left,
right,
left. Your
hands are tapping your knees, just back and forth and back and forth. And, again, it's especially if you're stuck and you can't get out and move or you can't turn on music and dance around your office. It's a great way to just and really put your attention on your hands and just let your mind drift.
Nice.
And it's a great way to bring down anxiety.
Nice. One of the other things I've talked about with many of the women on the call is the breathing, but sometimes it's so hard, Carol, to catch an inhale, so I've been telling people focus on the exhale first.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
In order to find the inhale. So,
yeah.
Is there anyone on the line who'd like to ask a question? Carol, if you don't mind, I'd like to talk a little bit more about you brought up the gastrointestinal, and in fact, I have a client who's having severe problems, but is really challenged with not really wanting to face the fact that this could be worry because they've actually found absolutely nothing wrong with her.
Mm-hmm.
So she's done every single test in the world, but having severe pains in her gastrointestines. And
yeah.
How do you get someone to get on track with worry or understand that there is such a serious connection to worry in the body?
Well, you know, I think a great question to ask is, you know, I get that you think there's something wrong with you. So what do you make of the fact that nothing's been found to be wrong with you physically? So just, you know, ask them, so what do you think about that?
Right.
And have that person, you know, because when you ask people to explain where they're coming from, explore, and I know you do that in your work, and I do as well when I, you know, teach. It's kind of like you want to hear where the person's coming from so you can match where they're at, and then to say, okay, I get that you may not believe that this is related to worry, but and I respect that, but for right now in this session, in this moment, let's just put that on the shelf. We'll pick it up later on, but let's start to work with worry as if it was affecting you physically. So if worry was affecting you physically, where might it reside in your body? And or to have them put their hand on their abdomen, their stomach, and just say, describe to me if that distress, if that pain could be a color, a texture, or a word, what might it be? And someone might say, it's brown and it's blah. Okay.
Yeah.
So if blah could talk, what might blah have to say? And start to get that inner dialogue going, because the body informs us of so much. And just allow it to talk out.
Carol, that piece was so good. I'm going to invite our callers, if they would like, to place their hand on an area where there might be worry. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
So I just think that was fascinating. So I'd like to invite you all to place your hand on your body where you think there might be some worry. And Carol, or some physical symptom. Carol, would you mind picking that up?
Not at all. So what's the physical symptom? It could be an area where you feel like deadness. It could be an area where you feel tingly, where you just would describe it as numb, where it feels blocked or no energy, or maybe an area that you just usually like to avoid. Place your hand there with great compassion. And just, again, even if it's your ankle, see if you could imagine as you take the breath in, just giving that area a little warm room. And if you were to describe it to someone, you're going to do this silently, but if you were to describe it to someone else, what color, what texture, visual, or what word comes to mind when you focus in on that area. Just let it float to your mind. And just take a deep breath again in through the nose. And exhale. I just have to share with you all, as I asked you to do that, to take a deep breath in, my dog did the same thing. It's adorable. Took a deep breath in. And then the second question I want you to ask is, if that area could speak again, what is it telling you? What could it tell you it needs right now in order to feel better? Again, it could be a color. It could be a visual. It could be something tangible, feeling state. A word. And just imagine that coming in toward that area. And you could feel, you might feel a bunch of different things. You might feel relief. You might feel sad. You might feel happy. Whatever it is. Sometimes we feel a sense of relief. Sometimes we feel tearful when we give ourselves what we want, what we've been waiting for. It doesn't mean that we're sad. We just feel relieved that we're finally giving ourselves that attention. Just notice what you wanted, what your body was expressing, and respect the fact that you have a lot of inner knowledge. And again, you can use that each and every time you need to figure out what it is that you need and want to feel better.
Carol, fantastic. Really well done. I know I have more space in my diaphragm right now. We have time for just one more question. Is there anyone on the line who would like to ask a question? All you have to do is just unmute with a *7 and just say your name.
Well, okay, this is Elaine again.
Okay, Elaine.
Oh, here's the deal. I have a friend who wants to give me her couch. I do not like her couch. I am having trouble declining her couch.
Okay.
That's my problem.
Okay.
Now, there are a lot of issues that are around that, I think.
About
saying no?
About saying no.
Yeah.
So sometimes when without knowing all the whole situation, sometimes
right.
The reasons people have said, you know, I can't say no because it would hurt the
right.
other person's feelings. And I say, okay, it might. And what do you imagine would happen?
Mm-hmm.
And we start to figure out that what we imagine they would be feeling is often much bigger than what is actually going on. You know, we picture things like, you know, they'll be devastated. They'll never recover. They'll never speak to me again. And to just simply saying, is that really true? Is that really true? Would that friend really break up a friendship over a couch? Is that really true? So one thing, and also the need to, you know, help somebody else out.
Right.
So you can simply be honest, Elaine, and say, I, you know, whoever it is, I so appreciate you wanting to offer me, and I really get that it comes from your heart, and I wouldn't want to hurt your feelings by saying no, but guess what? I have to say no. I don't have the room for it, and I really hope you understand. And go from there. So you're not only expressing your fear of what might happen, you're expressing how you feel about saying no, and then also telling them how much you appreciate the offer.
That's very nice. Thank you.
You're welcome.
What we're going to do is we're going to raffle Carol's book now. I'm going to just call off the women who are on the line, and if I didn't get your name, could you just let me know that you're on the line so I can put you in this drawing? Lauren, Ellen, Lisa, Elaine, Sandy, Penelope, Debbie, Sarah Lean, Julie, Marjorie. Is there anyone I did not get for this?
Susan.
Susan.
Jen.
Jen. Oh, Jen, hey.
Hi.
Ellen.
Ellen. Anyone else? Okay. So while I do that, can you hear me? I'm swirling it around in the glass bowl that we have that one our Saturday master classes. And let's see. The winner of tonight's, well, you'll send the book of the, it'll be a copy of Carol's book, Worried Sick.
Michelle?
Yes?
I'm sorry. I didn't give you my name. I didn't press the button right.
Okay, go ahead.
It's Laura.
Laura. Okay, hi, Laura.
Hi.
Okay, I'm going to swirl and twirl one more time. And the winner of tonight's, can you hear me swirling and twirling?
Yes. We can hear it.
Right, the winner of tonight's is Ellen. Oh. Ellen Peluso?
Yes, indeed.
Okay, Ellen, I'm not sure that I have your, could you send me an email, rochelle@rochellerice.com?
Okay.
With your mailing address?
And then alrighty, I'll do that.
I can ship it off to you.
Okay.
Wonderful. Listen, I have to. We did a different format tonight, but I'm wondering if we could just do, to finish out this evening, a quick go-around of our virtual circle here, if everyone could just say their name and where they're from. So maybe I'll help it out. Lauren, could you tell us where you're from, where you are?
It's Laura, and I'm from San Francisco.
Sorry, Laura.
Hi.
Do I have Lauren Lesser still on the line? Okay. Ellen, where are you from?
I'm from outside Philadelphia.
Wonderful. Lisa Gesson, are you still on the line? Okay. Elaine?
Yes, hi.
In Amherst, Massachusetts?
In Amherst, Massachusetts. Hello, Penelope.
Wonderful. Sandy, are you still on the line? Okay. Debbie Metrick? Sarah Lean? Julie? Marjorie? Okay. Well, I'll work that format a little differently next time. It's, we usually try to have people say where they're from, and it gives us a sense of how far across the country we are. So just a couple more things. Our next teleconference will be held on Monday, October 25th, the same time, the same dial-in information. And this one will be with Jeanette Brunet, who is a nourishment counselor. And I've asked Jeanette to come on and talk about inflammation because I find it fascinating when the body gets all puffy or tender, that what's actually happening inside and what is the relationship to weight management. And also, if you could put on your calendar Monday, November 29th, 3 Steps to a Healthier Holiday Season, and that'll be with Dr. Ryan Fuller, and we'll be working on that healthy holiday season. Carol, I want to thank you very, very much for joining us this evening. I really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. It was really a good group to connect to.
Terrific. Thank you. And thank you all very much for joining the call. It's wonderful to be back on the teleconference with all of you. I hope you breathe and sleep well this evening. Thank you and good night.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
Night.